線で先入12名ご利用交通機ご利用のお客様へご搭乗最終のご案内申し上げます。
I think one of us should say Rad Strangest, then another should say International.
You know what I'm saying?
Welcome to Rad Strangest. Like, what do you...
No, one of us would say...
Welcome to Camp Rad Strangeness.
International.
Howdy, campers, and welcome back. God, you can't start laughing.
Man, you startled me. You just said, you said campers, right? And I was, my brain's like, wait, what are we talking about? Campers?
And then I just said, howdy, campers.
We were just talking about hammocks. So I was like, is he still on that?
Well, I'm ready for business, dude.
Okay, you know, get in.
I don't know how many times we have to talk about how much more professional I am than you. I mean, it's just incredible. The scale would be like if I'm, let's just say I'm not even that extraordinary. I'm just like maybe like a 7. You're like a negative 10.
Yeah, well, here's the funny part, Woody. When you were gone on vacation, I took a poll on our Instagram, and it came back that I was the most professional host. So,
Well, and then
it's in the numbers.
What you didn't know,
it's in the numbers.
But what you didn't know was a metric that I cared about way more than that. And I took my own poll, and it was, hey, campers, who's your favorite host of all time? And they said Woody. So, you know,
that's dumb.
I mean, it's interesting, but who cares about polling? Howdy, campers, and welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, a podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, pre-internet mysteries, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. We are your camp counselors, Woody Brown.
And Tyler Bentz.
What's up, man?
Hey, pal.
Hey, honestly, before we jump into today's episode, I got to address something, and this isn't me. I'm not making up something about whether or not, this is not a bit. I'm not trying to just prove that I'm the favorite host, and you're kind of like, well, we could do without him kind of guy. Mm-hmm. You know, people aren't excited just because they can see that I'm charitable by allowing you to join, but this is not what that is about. This is 100% dead serious. We get a lot of questions via email and sometimes on our Instagram about our outro song. Most of the time, the question is something like, hey, man, I really love that song. I've tried to look for it.
I wrote it.
Like, who we wrote it.
And performed all the
songs. Who's it by? Yeah, I don't think I played guitar in that song, actually.
Oh, actually, you're right. You did not play it.
Yeah, because there's really just like the one. You're getting me distracted, man.
Sorry.
Okay. Anyhow, the quick version of the story is it's actually a song by us, performed by our band, The Modern Society. Mm-hmm. You can't find it on Spotify right now. But if you're a patron, and depending on what tier you choose, you can have access to all the music that Tyler and I have recorded together. So, just another reason for you to go visit our Patreon at patreon.com/thatwouldberad to check it out, join up, and you can get access to the song, that song specifically, but also other songs as well.
Nice.
What are we talking about today, Tyler?
So, today's topic, well, to be honest with everyone, I pivoted sometime earlier this morning, and I just didn't feel like this particular topic was not unworthy of, but it just didn't feel quite like a Camp Rad Strangeness sort of topic. Like, we're definitely going to get back to it. I'm not going to give it away now, but it kind of falls more into like folklore.
It's probably going to be like an October spooktacular.
Yeah, it's kind of spooky, but more sort of folklore, less like real world cryptid. So I decided to pivot, and this topic is a good one. It's a little bit riddled with, you know, there's a lot of believers that believe it on one side and an equal number that don't believe it on the other side. I am definitely a believer just because it's so fun and it sounds awesome. as far as like the legitimacy, I'm not totally sure, because once you start looking into it, mm-hmm. There's some characters in there that, it's there's a lot of like, oh, well, I got this from this source.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, which to be honest.
I guess the same can be true for a lot of the things that we talk about, right? We're not here to prove anything right or wrong. We're mm-hmm. just here to deliver these really cool stories that we come across.
Absolutely. And this is one that I've loved for such a long time. And I had sort of planned on doing like a big episode with this topic, sometime down the line, but I think we're ready. I think it's here.
Yeah.
Now's the time.
Well, I'm excited, man, because this is one of those situations, and I love to do it this way, mm-hmm. where I remember you mentioning this. You've given me sort of like the very, very brief gist of what this story entails and about this thing, but I don't know anything about it. Like, I, on purpose, don't look stuff up mm-hmm. so that I can kind of just, like the audience is going to do, either hear about it for the first time mm-hmm. or just kind of get some of those details that I didn't know about. So I'm super stoked, man.
Yeah, dude. And this one also, it kind of falls into that, like, it is technically, it is early 2000s, but it still kind of falls into that like coast to coast AM with Art Bell. It feels like that 90s kind of early internet sort of thing. So it's, mm-hmm. It's right up our alley. So here goes. In 2005, a man named Stephen Quayle would call in to the revered paranormal radio show, Coast to Coast AM, to talk about a U.S. Army squad that went missing in 2002. He claimed that the occurrence was still classified and that the Army refused to talk about it. According to Quayle's story, a group of soldiers went missing while on patrol in the remote mountain region of Kandahar in the south of Afghanistan. And when they failed to make radio contact for some time, the military sent in a special ops unit to investigate. Though the branch of armed forces they belonged to was never confirmed. We will, however, find out why later. Then, high up in the mountains, the unit came across a cave with scattered army equipment around, but no sign of the missing soldiers. And that's when they chanced upon the Kandahar Giant. With some reports suggesting that the humanoid grew as tall as 15 feet, this red-headed giant with 6 digits per hand, leather moccasins, and smelling like dead bodies, suddenly emerged from the cave and impaled one of the soldiers with what was said to be a 15-foot spear. And that's when the soldiers opened fire, ultimately felling the giant with 30 seconds of continuous fire. Between them, the squad was armed with fully auto M4 carbines, recon carbines, semi-automatic, and M107 Barrett anti-material rifles, firing 50 BMG.
They're firing CDs from a music subscription service?
This much firepower concentrated on one target for 1 second, let alone 30, would be extremely destructive.
After Real quick.
Okay.
50 BMG is a 50 caliber Browning machine gun. So it stands for, the brand. Now, real quick, man, before you go any further, because I just want to make sure I'm setting the scene in my mind mentally here.
Let's just call it. I'm not feeling it either.
Are you serious?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. So you've got this group of soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
They're just on patrol in a sort of a mountainous region.
Mm-hmm. In Afghanistan. Yep.
Which, dude, speaking of synchronicity, this is wild. It's so funny that you decided to do this today, because last night, Ann and I watched the new Guy Ritchie movie called The Covenant with Jake Gyllenhaal, and it's set in this region, so it's interesting.
Cool. How is that movie, actually?
Well, we'll talk about it later when we're done with the show.
Okay.
But just remind me. So anyhow.
I've heard it's good.
They are patrolling this freaking, how tall was it again?
Well, it kind of differs. So some...
Well, okay, hold on. Don't forget, ignore that question. But okay. You said it's got 6 digits per hand?
Yes.
So covered in red hair, like the whole body, or is it just like a...
Like white, you know, Caucasian looking with...
Oh, really?
With red hair. Yeah.
Like Conan O'Brien or Napoleon Dynamite just walks out of this cave. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into some more coming up that actually sheds a whole lot of that on our story.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Keep going.
But yeah, so some would say 13 feet to 15 feet. That's like sort of the rough kind of idea. After the troops killed the giant, they loaded it into a Chinook helicopter, which carried it to a transport plane where no one would ever see it again. The soldiers were forced to sign, I don't think the technical term in the military is a non-disclosure agreement, but basically that, you know, so the government could basically keep the whole thing quiet. Eventually, the soldiers would break their silence because, as one of the men would later say, the people have a right to know the truth. So, you know, that's back in 2005, and... That's around the time when I had first heard about this, and it was so fascinating. But then it just kind of disappeared into obscurity, sort of internet lore, urban legend kind of territory. Until August 2016, a YouTuber posted a lengthy interview with a military contractor who identified himself only as Mr. K. In this interview, Mr. K claimed to have been present during the brutal slaughter of a killer he called the Kandahar Giant. Hmm. The killing of the giant, he said, took place during the height of Operation Enduring Freedom in 2002, when the military was engaged in fierce battles with the Taliban in their de facto capital in Kandahar province during the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. But this was no human fighter. The Kandahar Giant, Mr. K said, was 13 feet tall, with fiery red hair, 6 fingers... And get this, 2 sets of teeth. It even killed one of the Special Forces soldiers with a spear before the rest of the unit brought it down within 30 seconds of sustained gunfire. After that, they radioed it in, the Army took away its corpse, and has hidden it ever since.
Man.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. So,
and just like you said, what's interesting is like that early 2000s, late 90s. I mean, this is when I was just... It's just like an interesting time period because I was about to graduate from college. I went to a military school, so all my buddies and stuff were actually getting, you know, they were graduating. They were graduating as officers and getting shipped out to Afghanistan. And so they would have been in this area potentially, you know, dealing with this kind of stuff at that time, which is just wild.
Yeah, and I think this would have also been the time that my Uncle Stuart would have probably still been over there too. He's done a ton of tours over there, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, like around that era. But then he kind of was called back pretty consistently for, you know, throughout like the early 2000s. So I actually hit him up this morning and asked him, and I got no response, which means that he was probably in that battalion. Yeah. Anyway, so after this YouTube interview by this Mr. K guy. The
sounds reputable.
Yeah, I mean, it could go both ways.
Mr. K.
Yeah. Snopes, which I kind of view with, what's the word I'm looking for?
Disdain.
Disdain, that's a great word. They actually reached out to the Department of Defense about the Kandahar Giant incident. The Department of Defense would tell the outlet in no certain terms that they had no record or information about a Special Forces member killed by a giant in Kandahar. What's more, there are no press releases on the Department of Defense's website involving either a Special Forces troop disappearing in Afghanistan or any incident involving soldiers felling a giant. To me, that doesn't really say anything. I mean,
yeah.
There's a whole lot that...
Well, I mean, look, if there is anything that any government, but
right.
specifically ours, is trying to ever hide, you think they're just going to be like, okay, you got us.
Yep. Yeah, right.
There is a giant.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, no.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much stuff that... I mean, hell, now I mean, the U.S. military is now sort of just coming out about all the UFO stuff, and we've obtained, you know, alien aircraft years ago, and it's like, yeah, no shit. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't have a whole lot of faith in that kind of stuff. Of course, as with any good conspiracy, this lack of evidence isn't sufficient proof that the myth of the Kandahar giant doesn't exist. In fact, Snopes' debunking of the legend actually sort of did the opposite, which sort of, like we were saying, sort of cemented the claim that, oh, well, the government's always, you know, hiding the truth, which, you know, I think they are. Around the same time that the Snopes article came out to discredit the story, author L.A. Marzulli, that's the name I was trying to think of before, he's an awesome writer. You know, if you're in the supernatural sort of world, he's like a really, really intelligent guy. His big thing is like the Nephilim, which I'm going to get into here in a little bit. But he's a really fascinating guy because he, I don't know if he was like the first, but he was one of the first sort of guys to sort of like connect this ancient view of giants with possibly Bigfoot and more sort of modern takes, you know, of the term giants or whatever. L.A. Marzulli would tell several websites that the United States government was covering up the spectacular story and that those in power had a vested interest in keeping the truth of biblical prophecy from being exposed to the general public, which actually, I mean, I'm kind of with him on that. People have the right to know about this stuff. If there are 15 or 18 foot giants roaming the earth and our military has brought them down, we have a right as American citizens to know about it, he said. I mean, this isn't classified military stuff. This is something we need to know, and it always points back to biblical prophetic narrative. Now, you guys may not necessarily be, or, you know, believe in the Bible, or maybe you do, but you view it as more of like a metaphorical type thing. And so L.A. Marzulli is, he's very much like into everything being like, you know, by the book, you know, non-metaphorical, totally sort of real. And I mean, I'm kind of with him on a lot of that. The cool thing about this is that, you know, the story of the Kandahar giant is actually, you know, as fascinating as it is, and as sensational as it is, L.A. Marzulli, whose YouTube chamble, God almighty.
YouTube chamble.
So yeah, so as sensational as the story is, you know, it's even more fascinating if you actually do sort of start looking at it when it, you know, when it ties into possible biblical events.
Yeah.
In a now deleted video posted on August 16th, 2016, L.A. Marzulli interviewed Mr. K, who we were talking about. He would, you know, say that he was a soldier, he was a contractor, which I think that one little element is interesting because one of the things that I remember back in the day was, oh, well, you know, this story could never say, you know, the like the recovery unit, like the team who came out to look at, to see if they could find the other unit. They could, nobody ever came out and said like what branch of the military they were, like, you know what I mean? And so that was like one of the things that was kind of used by like the critics to say, oh, well, it's debunked because, you know, it wasn't, you know, it never talked about like the actual unit. Well, the interesting thing is that he was like a special ops, like an operator. So he was kind of a contractor by the military, but wasn't actually, which a lot of that
duty.
Yeah. A lot of that stuff happens. And I know this, you know, on a personal level. And I think that's a way that a lot of stuff is sort of, it's able to happen
to
like
done,
off the books. You know what I mean? But Mr. K would claim that he saw the giant carrying a spear and murdering a United States soldier named Dan before he and the other special forces took it down. According to Marzulli, the creature was a Nephilim. I don't know if you guys know this, but the Nephilim, it's spoken about in the Bible, it's spoken about in the books of Enoch, the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's a group of people mentioned in Genesis and Numbers books of the Old Testament, as far as the Bible is concerned, who are said to be people of unusually large size and strength that could be found in the Middle East both before and after the flood of Noah's Ark fame. Biblical scholars largely agree that the Nephilim tales were metaphors and not based on the reality of a 13-foot giant living in the desert. What's more, and this is where the debunkers come in, the only Dan that died in Kandahar around the time of this alleged incident in 2002 was Sergeant First Class Daniel A. Romero, who was killed in a bomb blast alongside three other soldiers. Now, to me, that still doesn't really, do anything.
Also, public record about who died where.
Yeah, I mean,
especially if you're in a special forces unit or a SEAL team, right. That stuff isn't necessarily going to be in public reach.
Yeah, exactly.
Also,
after these messages, we'll be right back.
Something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man.
Hey, this is Bryce Johnson from the Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you're listening to Tyler and Woody on That Would Be Rad, because that is rad.
What kind of metaphor are you trying to teach people when you talk about giants?
Well, so
other than David and Goliath, maybe, you can tackle the giant, and maybe that's a metaphor for
representing.
You know what I'm saying? What is that person trying to say?
Well, so what they're saying is a lot of biblical scholars will argue over units of measurement. They'll say, Goliath wasn't actually this tall. He was actually, okay, 6 foot tall because of. Which all of that doesn't really line up, at least to me, on a personal level. If you believe that, that's all good. But I'm just saying personally, when you look at it and you look at sort of a cross-reference between, and I'm going to get more into this, especially with the Nephilim and that whole kind of thing, it all kind of, it's almost like you have, even though there's these non-canonical books that are sort of considered inspired books of the Bible. So you have the Apocrypha, you have the Dead Sea Scrolls, you have the first and second book of Enoch. I think it's important to, whether you believe they're, quote unquote inspired or not, I think it's important to sort of look at certain topics across all of them, because even if they're not technically inspired and they shouldn't be canon to the Bible, I still think that they still carry a lot of historical stuff that can that when cross-referenced can bring even more believability and historical reference to other books. But anyway, even with the evidence stacked against it, the myth of the Kandahar giant is still said to be an open secret among soldiers who served in Kandahar in 2002, and several veterans who served in the region have said that from that point on, they were instructed to point their weapons high by aiming for the head and then point even a little higher. I think that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, that's kind of it as far as, what we sort of know as far as the story. It's really not a long story.
So it's really just that specific single sort of event that is the main sort of mystery here, right? That can include everybody into, maybe there's a race of giants still living in the Middle East.
Yeah, exactly. And it is pretty cool that, if we associate any of the Bible, we immediately think it's all in that sort of setting. And so it is pretty cool to have basically another Goliath coming out of a cave.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
What's interesting, about that region is, and I think this kind of just helps just sort of add to the mystique, kind of like what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
These are areas, it's we, our young country just celebrated, you know, July 4th. And when you look at globally in comparison, like, man, our age as a country is pretty insignificant in comparison to like places that have had thousands of years of history, culture, and things like this, honestly, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So you like think about, I mean, that's the first thing that I thought of. I remember when you told me about this incident, right? Is just thinking about it with that context and through that lens, these young soldiers basically seeing a modern day Goliath.
Yeah.
And to think about like that being, if you take any kind of sort of, you know, like magical sense out of it, and it's just like a freaking humongous dude. I mean, we've got people like that all the time in, you know, Hollywood and stuff. I don't know. There's a bunch of like these big, huge dudes. So it's not too far-fetched to me. I mean, we've got people that play in the NBA that are 7+ feet tall. And, you know, I don't know if you, Tyler, or any of you listeners have ever had a chance to kind of like meet an NBA player in person, but I think I've told my Charles Barkley story here, so I'm not going to repeat it. It's so embarrassing. But
what is it? Which one?
Oh, my God, dude. My buddy was getting married. He had some kind of like bachelor party in Buckhead. And it's not really like my vibe, so to speak. And so I was just kind of like, yeah, man, happy for you. And then anyway, I go to the bar there to get a fresh glass of water.
Yeah,
and you know, you got to hydrate. And I just kind of like come to the bar and this guy like turns around and no joke, this, you know, big dude. It's Charles Barkley. He hands me like a drink. I'm like, huh? Oh, thanks, man. And then there's this like 10 to 15 seconds of sort of awkward, why did he hand me this? And oh my God, that's Charles Barkley. And then a realization in his eyes that I'm not who he thought I was. And so he kind of just like takes the drink back, shakes my hand, and that was it. I'm like, okay. Hey, man. See you later, Charles. And
I mean, that's pretty cool, though.
His hand was humongous, dude. It's like, imagine if, you know, imagine like shaking my pinky, but that pinky being someone's hand. That's the difference there. But anyhow, so, I mean, like those genetics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, exist already in a way.
I felt
but then
like,
also like.
I felt like that when I met Vince Vaughn. Yeah. I mean, it felt like you were shaking hands with like a bushel of bananas.
Banana hands, yeah. So it's interesting to me, especially if we take like the more biblical sort of historical look at this, right? So, okay, maybe the units of measure through translation are a little bit different. Okay, sure. But like, why would they think he was big in any way if, you know, it's like, it's not like everybody back then was 4 feet tall.
Right.
And all of a sudden they've got a 6 foot tall.
Yeah.
You know, also, this is interesting. I looked this up. I don't know. Are you going to get into some of the biblical sort of references? Okay.
Before I move on to that, though, I do want to get into, and they're kind of hard to find, but there's actually several other accounts, like, you know, throughout the ages of like our military coming in contact with giants over there, which is pretty cool. They include the giant of Kunar, which was a massive being an infantry team leader reportedly saw during a deployment between 2008 and 2009. It says, while overlooking a village one fateful night, the soldier peered through his newly mounted thermal scope. As he spanned the valley, he came across a very large heat signature. He assumed it was a group of Taliban fighters huddled together around a light high up in the mountains. All of a sudden, the heat signature stood up as one being, the soldier recalled. The trees in that area grew up to around 10 to 12 feet tall, and this thing was at least as tall, if not taller than the trees that surrounded it. The giant stride was slow and relaxed, yet it moved with incredible speed, the soldier added, noting the giant's relaxed yet purposeful vibe. It walked parallel to the soldier's position for a time before disappearing along a nearby spur. Stories of the encounter were not shared with many, the soldier reportedly said, but memories of what he had seen came flooding back after listening to a coast-to-coast dispatch in which he called in. I think that's what I saw, a member of an ancient race of giants that descended from fallen angels, he said. Or it could be something like Sasquatch. I'm really not sure. So that's pretty cool, giant of Kunar. There's also an anonymous Air Force drone operator who was working in the northern part of Afghanistan during the war. Scanning around, doing my thing, and looking for stuff, he recalled. One day, the drone operator spotted three giants, each standing roughly 12 feet tall. There's a ruler tool that tells you how wide your crosshair is, and the people were as tall as the crosshair was wide.
What?
This was all in mid-wave infrared at night, so they showed up as black humanoid heat signatures. For 10 minutes, the operator observed them, during which time he reported the giants tended their fire and performed other chores, you know, giant stuff. The only interesting thing was the size, the operator wrote. The goats looked like cats next to them.
Jeez.
Another airman recalled doing a pre-op soak northeast of the Korangal Valley, where he scanned and analyzed real-time video feeds. According to his elaborate account, the airman watched some dudes around a fire to see if he could identify any weapons. After about 20 minutes, what we thought were two dudes huddled together under a blanket stood up, the airman said. This guy made the rest of the dudes look like children in terms of height. He stood up and walked over to a mud hut that he had to bend over to get in.
Weird.
Yeah. And finally, an Australian army officer who was on sentry duty in the country's Uruzgan province recalled spotting a giant going for a leisurely stroll around a nearby compound. It was lanky and wore unusual clothing, he said. By lazing the compound, the officer estimated the giant to be about 1,800 meters away. It wasn't in any hurry, and I followed it for about 5 minutes before it went out of my field of vision. Adding that he suspected the giant to be around 12 feet tall or 14 feet, according to its Tinder profile. What does that mean?
Are you serious?
I don't know what that means. I don't think it's what we think it means.
The giant apparently had a Tinder profile?
I mean, I guess. Just looked like it was walking. Wasn't in a hurry at all, but was aware of what was happening around it. Kept looking around, especially near the compound. I don't know of anyone else who saw anything like it. Never told anyone about it before, but it has stayed with me for all these years. So I think that, like, I don't know, I find that fascinating. And there's been several other people that have sort of come out and made comments. One guy said he was at least 12 to 15 feet in height. And this is another guy that claimed to be part of the, you know, the operators that would come out that had the original conflict with the original Kandahar giant. And he would say he was at least 12 to 15 feet in height with long red hair and beard, six fingers on each hand and foot, double sets of teeth, an awful smell, and wearing some sort of moccasin. Mm. When the creature came out of the cave, he immediately speared and killed one of the soldiers. Then he would say it was too big, we couldn't move it, the soldier claimed. It smelled worse than a skunk, like a corpse that's been around for a while. The communication was sent out that we had a very large, possibly human creature. When help came, the giant was then loaded into the aircraft and never seen again. It has been rumored to have been brought to the U.S. and possibly even somewhere in Ohio, which I think that's kind of cool. You know, it reminds me of the, and of course we haven't done this episode yet, but like the Roswell crash, you know, it was put on an aircraft in New Mexico and then sent to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. A couple other folks have, you know, also comment on it. A guy said, I lived in Kabul from 2005 to 2013. It was the best time of my life, but never forgot how paranormal and weird Afghanistan can get. It truly is a graveyard. It makes you wonder how often stuff like this actually does occur and people just aren't allowed to talk about it and is made top secret as well. This is seriously no joke. Not only are the legends of the Nephilim present in the Middle East, but they were also here in the USA. The same features of having red hair and six digits on each hand and toe are discussed from the story of the Anasazi, the Navajo language for enemy ancestor. The Anasazi were known to possess powers no human should have, extended knowledge of mathematics and infrastructure. Their hieroglyphs depict events of portals as found all around the world as well, and giant beings coming out from them. Old indigenous prophecy, which has survived in pieces up to today. They run parallel with biblical stories that are mentioned in Enoch. and Genesis. So I did time overseas in the Army. I never personally saw a giant, but the locals around our base were 100% convinced that they were in the caves, that they were actually terrified about it. They would never go out at night. A lot of things in this video is the same story I was hearing from the locals. Bad smell, 10 to 13 feet tall, and extremely agile with red hair. So I think that's pretty cool, man. Like,
yeah, I mean, this kind of seems like it would be one of those things where, you know, if you spend 5 minutes Googling it or researching it online or whatever, you're going to get a mix split down the middle of, oh, man, this seems pretty cool and, you know, legit. Mm-hmm. And then the other half is going to be like, absolutely not.
Yeah, right.
This kind of stuff.
Right.
Which, you know, I get it. You know, it is kind of hard to... you know, to try to prove one way or the other when there's everything is sort of based on
like hearsay kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Legend, I mean, it's funny because that's the element of this that's kind of the most damning, but then also kind of the most believable at the same time. Like, because it is tied in with, you know, specifically U.S. military, like I come from a military family. But at the same time, I'm very... very aware that there's so much stuff that's sort of, you know, kept under lock and key that nobody will ever find out about.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the quote unquote, like real story for a lot of these things that have happened.
Yeah.
You know, we're told one thing and in reality, you know, something else clearly happened.
Sure.
You know?
Well, and then another argument that I'm sure people have is like, well, you know, why isn't there any, how's there not like a photograph of from that day?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, 2002, like if I go back, it's laughable. When I go back and look at like pictures from that time period, the crappy like disposable cameras and stuff. I mean, you just didn't have that kind of equipment.
No.
All the time with you, especially if you're like on a patrol and you're trying to like find some missing soldiers or whatever it was, you know, you've got survival gear and your weapons and you're not trying to take, you know, because if you think about it, most of the pictures that you see, my friends included, of that time period when they were in the military, it's like they're on base. They're maybe in front of the Humvee or something, but they're not like, hey, check this out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think too, you know, and like I said before, like there's a lot of videos. I mean, I say a lot, not really, actually. There's several videos that it's just hard to kind of, it's hard for me at least to sort of land on one side or the other. It's like, you know, you clearly have videos that are just like completely unbelievable, you know, and I'm someone who like wants to believe. And so when I see certain things, it's like, okay, you know, I'm a graphic designer, an artist, so I feel like I have a decent eye, and like when there's like any tinge of like, ah, this is CGI, I move on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the other ones that are, you know, still that I'm kind of a little unsure of are videos that look like they were probably taken around that period, like you were just talking about. And the tough thing is because the resolution is so low, you know, it's just like a speck in the distance or like a silhouette, like way off, or like a night vision, like infrared, like helicopter view. And it's just hard to like, it's hard to sort of get a, like a scale of what you're looking at, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you could take a night vision, you know, thermal image of me walking across a desert and you could say, look, it's a giant, because there's nothing.
Well, no.
I'm saying if it were just me, there's nothing around that's going to give it like a sense of scale to show how high I am. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when we get back, let's get a little bit back into the Nephilim and how this giant of Kandahar could possibly be the same giants that we read about in the Bible.
We'll return after these messages.
Pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire. Vampire.
You think you really know what's happening around here, don't you?
Is anyone out there?
We're fighters for truth, justice,
in the American way.
Hey, this is Woody.
And this is Tyler. And you're listening to That Would Be Rad.
And now, back to our show. Now, one thing I will say, well, it's just like, this is one of those legends or stories that it's just interesting to me, man, like how like upset people get when you just like read stuff on, like, there's no way this could be true.
F you.
And it's like, yeah, dude, you're like, okay, bro. I mean, like, relax, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just interesting to me that people take think about the fact that someone has to take time out of their day.
Right.
To just be negative.
Well, the funny
thing. Toward somebody else, man.
The funny thing is like, because this is sort of based on, you know, the Kandahar Giant, because it's based in like, in, you know, the U.S. military and, you know, slash like U.S. government and stuff. It's so funny how, you know, like some of the little blurbs that I was reading where, you know, somebody would come out and say, you know, I heard about this when I served over there and all this stuff. You know, and then you have these people who just come from this like this place of like pure like black and white absolution where they're like, there's no way that this could have happened because we would have heard a press release. And it's like,
yeah,
what are you?
Not in the early 2000s, we wouldn't have.
Not even that, but even now, it's like, like, why do we think like WikiLeaks was so important? Why do we think, because none of that stuff would have ever gotten out, you know? And so, I just find it interesting that people are like so.
Well, dude, we live in this such a weird time where Anne and I talked about this one time, and I think maybe you and I have before. Heck, we might have even talked about on the show. Here's something that I 100% believe. The second coming will happen, and no one's going to believe that it's real.
Right. Yeah.
You know, everyone's going to be like, well, I think it's a hologram. And by the way, I mean, think about it, dude. I don't even want to say that on air. I'm going to not say that.
But what?
I'm just going to say, like, if you were, I'm going to cut this out.
This portion of the show has been removed by Tyler and Woody. However, it's included in the next bonus episode on the Patreon. Visit www.patreon.com/thatwouldberad for exclusive access to this and other bonus content.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, so you were asking before, like, some of the more, like, biblical stuff.
Yeah,
and how,
yeah, yeah.
Like, the Nephilim, you know, ties into this. So who are the Nephilim?
Yeah.
The Nephilim kind of, it sort of lies in these ancient accounts of the Nephilim and their offspring. Conclusions about the nature of the Nephilim as borne out by quotes from the book of Enoch, as well as the books of Jude and Revelation, which is in the Bible. Present a remarkable picture, as do the actual mentions in the original Old Testament, of the Nephilim, the Anakim, the Anunnaki, the Raphaim, and the Rapha, along with others descended from Nephilim forebears. In fact, the traditional Hebrew view is that the Rapha, meaning interchangeably dead / evil spirits / demons, and giants, are the spirits of the half-angelic Nephilim offspring that were killed in the great cataclysm we remember as the flood. This is not a tall tale, but a truth of which Jesus himself and his disciples were well aware of. This is why they quoted from the book of Enoch. The story can also be found in the books of Jasher, Jubilees, and the recently found Dead Sea Scroll, the Book of Giants. Angels have bodies. They can take a variety of forms, as well as, you know, even Satan, it says, can appear as an angel of light. There are two angelic rebellions believed, the first being the Luciferian rebellion that most of us are familiar with. This is the source of what Paul calls in the 6th chapter of Ephesians, spirit wickedness in high places. This is why Jesus calls Satan the prince of the powers of the air.
So real quick, for listeners that might not be extremely familiar with the Christian tradition and stuff, talk a little bit about this like initial rebellion, if there's context, really. I just want to make sure that people understand.
Yeah, okay. But basically you have, Lucifer was, you know, now we, the devil, Satan, whatever. Lucifer was a very high-ranking angel. They said that he was just, you know, pure beauty, you know, an angel of light. It said that, like, when he would walk, which this is kind of fascinating, when he would walk, his body was made to like make music. So it would sound, it would like make the sounds of like brass instruments and like drums and like reed pipes and stuff. Just whenever he would walk, he was really powerful. So, you know, just a very concise, dumbed down version is he became prideful. And from how I kind of see it, he wanted, not necessarily wanted to be God, you know, the creator, but he wanted the like sort of the same level of like respect and acclaim and, you know, attention as that. And so because of his pride, him and a third of the angels would fall out of heaven, basically. Mm. Which, and there's a lot there that can kind of go in different places. But when we're looking at the Nephilim, what we're talking about is basically, you know, it's all sort of based out of the Bible, the books of Enoch, and, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls and all this stuff like we're talking about. The word Nephilim means those who came or those who fell down. Mm. They were basically, and I think the book of Enoch, I'm kind of doing a lot of this just off the top of my head, but I think it was in the book of Enoch where it talks about, you know, in the beginning there were 300 of these characters called Watchers. And the translation is really different in multiple places. You know, it talks about these 300 Watchers. Some say they're angels, some say they're, you know, sort of minor gods. But basically, they chose to come down and they would take human wives. Well, it says the sons of God would take human wives for themselves, as many as they wanted. And then their children were the Nephilim of old, which are basically the giants. And they were called, I mean, it says they were giants in those days, men of old, men of renown. And so the, you know, these 300 like watchers are what I think this is the second fall that they're talking about. This is the second like rebellion or whatever, where these 300 watchers, they come down and they start sort of commingling with human women, having, you know, their offspring are basically giants. And, you know, then basically God had to cleanse the earth because all the bloodlines were like intermixed, and it was chaos everywhere. And one thing that's really interesting about this is this idea, you know, and I mean, I don't think any of us can know for sure, but I do like this idea that like the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is like our oldest written story, right?
Yeah.
In all of history, you know, he was 14 feet tall, and it talks about how there's like a line in there where it talks about how he came from heaven or he appeared or something. And I like the idea that you have these like demigods and like, you know, Greek mythology, you know, Zeus and like Hercules was half human, mm-hmm. half God. I like the idea that these sort of offspring of angels or watchers mm-hmm. and humans were these kind of giants. And then part of the reason that it was so bad is they, you know, of course, because they're giants, you know, they would pretty much enslave anybody else around them. So they would mm-hmm. sort of elevate themselves as deities.
Right.
And so the idea that has kind of carried over all across the earth, you know, and so you look at these figures, you look at Gilgamesh, you look at the Greek pantheon, just the idea that maybe those like quote unquote gods, like little g gods, maybe those were the same thing as the Nephilim, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. And so it was such a far reaching thing. And there were so many, and it was said that they were sort of enslaving like all these different, you know, places far and wide, that the earth had to be cleansed. And that's why we have Noah and the ark.
Which makes, you know, and this is going to be, well, I mean, this is going to show sort of my, well, how limited my adult knowledge of the Bible is in comparison to when I was younger and stuff, you mm-hmm. know, when I really kind of paid attention a lot more and kind of immersed myself in those stories. Like, I don't, these concepts of there being a second rebellion and the Nephilim being sort of referred to as like sons of God and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think, you know,
it's one of those. It says the sons of God came to take wives from as the daughters of Adam, which means
right. these. So it's almost like divine you imagine this, and it's kind of difficult. Again, we're treading, potentially, I'm going to tread on some ground here that if you are, you know, a stout believer or something, it could be interpreted as me being sort of insensitive or what's a better word for that? Like blasphemous, I guess. And so
heretical.
I'm just kind of saying this, huh?
Heretical.
I'm just saying this ahead of time, just as like a preemptive sort of like, that's not my intention. It's just interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, here's what's interesting, that to think about like just the earth and humanity and stuff as kind of like less a solid sort of black and white sort of plan of action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you throw in our own human behavior into the mix and stuff. And I think we somehow still kind of like, maybe that there was a solid plan in place. And then we just, human nature sort of got involved because of our like free will and all this kind of stuff. We kind of just messed it up and mm-hmm. it was like, come on, man, here we go, you know?
Yeah.
But it seems it's more of like an experiment really.
Yeah.
You know, like with all these like, well, now we've got Adam and Eve and then, well, hey, okay, you guys, you know, I'll let you stay down there too. And then all of a sudden, uh-oh, they're intermingling. And then now there's a bunch of evil and we got to, you know, cleanse the earth and stuff. It starts to get pretty heavy.
Well, one of the things that, you know, and I don't know, there's many other folks that have so much more knowledge on this kind of stuff. But I will say, and it's something that I've always kind of struggled with. It's the idea that like, okay, there's a God, you know, your creator God is all-knowing, omnipotent, you know, omniscient, like knows everything, knows the beginning, you know, he is the Alpha and the Omega, he knows everything. And so why would he not have like known that this was going to happen, you know, before like the rewrite? But I think, and I'm not saying this is why, but I do like the idea that in the book of Enoch, I think it's the first book of Enoch, it talks about, you know, it talks about in the beginning, there were these 300 watchers who were above the earth. And so I think the idea was that like, basically they were kind of there to look out for us and sort of watch over the leaders of these different areas of the planet. And so they rebelled and then they came down. And so I don't know. I feel like maybe there's something in that
mm-hmm.
that sort of allowed this plan to like get through, because it wasn't really us. It was from these like other divine,
yeah.
you know, divine beings, angels, whatever class they would really fall into. And that's the other thing that's a little confusing is like, in different translations, these watchers, you know, like I said before, it's like, are they angels? Are they, you know, sort of others kind of like deities? Like, what are they? And so yeah. that's the second fall that they're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. So like they're kind of fallen angels that have decided
yeah, they're,
almost
they're,
rebellion-wise to go and just like get it on with all these hot human ladies.
Yeah, kind
on
of.
On Earth. Yeah.
Which is interesting because there is...
But not too unlikely if it was me up there.
No, I mean, I do think that it's interesting because, like, there is a verse, and of course I cannot... there's no way.
While you're looking... Listen, while you're looking that up, I got to... Can I just read something that I just read?
Yeah, what'd you find?
Some believe the fallen angels who begat the Nephilim were cast into Tartarus.
Yeah.
2 Peter 2, 4, Jude 1, 6, Greek Enoch 20, verse 2. And it says a place of total darkness. Mm-hmm. Now listen to this, dude. This is, I mean, full body chills here. An interpretation is that God granted 10%, and our buddy Tim is going to love this, 10% of the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim
yep.
to remain on earth after the flood
mm-hmm.
as demons to try to lead the human race astray until the final judgment.
Hmm.
weird, man.
Yeah.
Like the whole when I read just happened, my eyes went straight to the word disembodied. And I was like, whoa, man.
Yeah.
Or the Nephilim, also these disembodied voices that we hear.
Yeah.
That have been around since the flood. They know how to lure us in.
I mean, God, does everything come back?
Everything comes back to disembodied voices, man. And also, I mean, now I'm thinking of like, we got 300 watchers. I mean, are we aliens, bro?
I mean, you never know. You really never know. I think that, So one of the things about these watchers is, that's what I was going to say. So there's a place in the Bible, of course, I can't think of where it's at, but there's a line that I've never really understood where it talks about how during like when you're sort of like praising or like worshiping, you know, sort of like dancing to sort of like praise God or whatever,
mm-hmm.
It talks about like how the women should always be like covered up. Mm-hmm. And I've never really understood that. And so then it goes on to say they should be covered up for the sake of the angels.
Mm.
And it's weird because like it doesn't really make sense if you're thinking of it in the sort of traditional sense.
Modern
day. That like all angels are good. And
well, also it doesn't make sense to us in, you know, modern day church, but like we got to like remind ourselves here, Christianity originated in the same area that like the Muslim tradition is mm-hmm. currently, right? And so like even just traditional clothing wise, it kind of makes sense, you know, keep those women covered up so those angels don't see them. It doesn't tempt the angels. It doesn't,
yes. Well, that,
you know what I'm saying?
And so that's what I'm saying. I think that's what it's talking about. I never really thought about that until kind of getting into this research this morning that, wow, that sort of makes sense. It's not referring to these like, oh, they're all good angels, but these possible like sort of watcher angels. But so basically they also would come down and, you know, in their rebellion, in their sort of co-mingling with the daughters of Adam, you know, earth women, they also introduced, and a lot of this is like in the Apocrypha too, it says that they, you know, they sinned against, the Nephilim and their children sinned against all flesh, creating hybrid creatures, which were part human, part beast, part fowl. The 300 fallen watchers, their original job was sort of to protect humanity. But they were actually like utterly depraved once they kind of got caught up in living down here, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It says they also taught mankind the arts of witchcraft, sorcery, drug abuse, and war, you know, and so after years and years, the human race was tainted kind of beyond recovery. And so one of the other interesting things about it is when you read about Noah and his family, it says that it wasn't just a thing about like his character. In Genesis, it talks about how, unlike the rest of humanity, Noah was found perfect in all his generations. He and his family were untainted, which I think that means it's like untainted by this other fallen angel sort of bloodline, you know, which was, you know, cursed to, you know, damnation.
Mm.
And a lot of people think that, and I think this is like a, there's a guy named Gary Wayne who really gets into the Nephilim also. And he,
never trust a guy with two first names.
Yeah, right. No, he's extremely intelligent guy, but his thought is that when the flood happens, or when, you know, all of these, the offspring, the Nephilim, they, not all of them were necessarily destroyed, but they were, their spirits or whatever were still confined to the earth. So it's this idea that, you know, when we think of like demons and like possession and oppression, when the earth was flooded, their spirits are still confined to this prison earth. Mm. And so that's what we view as now as like demons. And that's why they have to possess human bodies, because they don't have bodies anymore.
Yeah.
Which is pretty fascinating, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, and man, this just goes into a bunch of stuff that I'm so curious about, like, I just lost my train of thought, though, so.
Oh, boy.
Keep going, I guess.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. When they talk about things like in, like Noah's Ark, for example, mm-hmm. you know, they talk about that. A lot of places have used that as, there's certain, like, sort of stories and themes that they have some parallels in previous mythology from those areas, Greek or, you know, that sort of Mesopotamia type area. Mm-hmm. And one of them is like the Noah thing. There's a, you said something about Gilgamesh earlier. There's a huge great flood in that. And so even just growing up, I always wondered too, this is, you know, we talk about pre-internet mysteries. This is pre-light bulb mystery. I mean, this is pre-everything, right? Yeah. When somebody was writing something down back then and they said the world, right? Did they know just how big the world was? In other words, did the flood truly encompass the entire earth? Or when they wrote that, did it basically flood their quote unquote world? I know that's kind of hard to follow.
Well, I think the thing that's actually doesn't go against what you just said, but I think the thing that adds to it is that there are these like, you know, diluvian eras in almost every place, like every sort of like belief system, not necessarily like religious belief system, but sort of historical belief system in like so many areas, like they all have this sort of flood, you know, quote unquote myth, which I've always thought was really cool.
It's super cool. And I've always wondered, you know, like...
We will return after these messages.
America's future can be determined by our dreams and our visions.
It was very intense, bright light.
For over 200 years, there have been reports of giant, man-like creatures.
From another dimension, another world, I don't know.
The most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
This is Joshua Cutchin, and you're at my home for weirdness. That would be rad.
I hate to use words like primitive or whatever, but like
canceled
ancient. No, I just mean like ancient humans, right? Part of the reason why I think they worshipped things like the sun and the moon and the flow of water and stuff, where they're these huge natural phenomenon that are almost unexplainable to someone that hasn't had any sort of education about them, right? And so I often wondered when I was growing up, you know, reading about these things, to me, it makes it like, I think sometimes this can be interpreted as like, well, that sounds kind of atheist. And that to me, the opposite is true for me, actually, to think that like someone writing this truly believed like, man, no, this flood destroyed everything that I know of, you know, but, you know, maybe not the other side of the world. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just interesting to me because maybe, in other words, all that to say, Noah's flood might not have been the first time that this experiment went awry. And,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, and this is kind of bringing it back into our neck of the woods. But, you know, like I said before, when it talks about in the books of Enoch, it talks about, you know, these fallen angels coming down and teaching humans how to like basically cross-pollinate or create these sort of chimera or hybrids of like animals and humans. To me, if you're looking, and it's funny because everything that I'm saying, I have like this twinge of like, you know, am I being heretical by saying this?
Yeah.
Because I grew up in a tiny little Baptist church and, you know, on Blue Creek. But my adult sort of, you know, version of me that is a host on this podcast, I think that's fascinating because to me, therein lies like, okay, well, whatever these practices are, or this sort of like angel, like technology or, you know, the things that they taught humanity, like, is this like sort of describing cryptids? Is this describing, you know, why we have a Mothman, why we have, you know,
these like things that sort of live within the purview outside of like just a regular, you know, human. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty fascinating. Yeah, you know,
for sure, man. The Nephilim and the potential ties that it has, almost as like a race of people that over time has certainly, I'm sure, been diluted. You know, I guess if there's a giant that exists in Kanahar, how did it survive the flood? My only thought kind of goes back to...
So even in the Bible, it does talk about how, and again, I don't know how this works, but it does talk about how, like, you know, you talk about like the Canaanites and how like this guy was, you know, within the lineage of this guy. So it kind of, there's like several places in the Bible and all the other, you know, Dead Sea Scrolls, Book of Enoch, where it does make reference that like these sort of lineages are not totally gone as far as these like connections that link back to these like giants and these.
I just imagine like one of these giants basically doing the thing where he's like on his knees, but he like ties the shoe to his knees. And they're just kind of like walking up the plank up the Noah's Ark. And they're like, whoops, wait a minute, sir. And he's like, huh, everything's fine.
We're good.
He's like so awkward. He's like, oh, okay. Just barely making it up this ramp.
Just barely made it. No, I don't know. I mean, I also wonder, you know, is it, I guess, like the theory that I brought up with Gary Wayne, like, you know, yes, they were wiped out, but it's like, you know, are they like possessing these other people? And then that's somehow how the bloodline like continues. It gets real confusing.
Yeah. It gets a little bit intense.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take a left turn here.
Okay.
Because one of the things the giant of Kandahar sort of brought up in my thinking was, well, wait a minute, that's not the first time I've heard of these sort of attributes. And I know that this is technically illegal in, you know, Camp Rad Strangers International, but I got to take it back to America just for a little bit.
Okay. So
if you're looking at multiple Native American tribes, you know, a lot of these tribes, and I'm talking like a lot of these tribes, all talk about these, you know, races of giants or these other tribes that consisted of giants. We talk about like the Choctaw. Horatio Bardwell Cushman wrote in his 1899 book, History of the Choctaw, Chickasaw, and Natchez Indians. He told of a race of giants that once inhabited the now state of Tennessee and with whom their ancestors fought when they arrived in Mississippi in their migration from the West. Their tradition states the Nahulo, which were a race of giants, was of wonderful stature. Cushman said Nahulo came to be used to describe all white people, but it originally referred specifically to a giant white race with red hair whom the Choctaw came into contact when they first crossed the Mississippi River. The Nahulo were said to be cannibals whom the Choctaw killed whenever the opportunity arose.
Man.
Chief Rolling Thunder of the Comanche tribe, which existed in the Great Plains, gave the following account of an ancient race of white giants in 1857. Innumerable moons ago, a race of white men, red hair, 10 feet high, and far more rich and powerful than any white people now living, here inhabited a large range of the country, extending from the rising to the setting sun. Their fortifications crowned the summits of the mountains, protecting their populous cities situated in the intervening valleys. They excelled every other nation which was flourished, either before or since, in all manner of cunning handicraft, were brave and warlike, ruling over the land they had wrested from its ancient possessors with a high and haughty hand. Compared with them, the pale faces of the present day were pygmies in both art and arms. The chief explained that when this race forgot justice and mercy and became too proud, the Great Spirit wiped it all, and all that was left of their society were the mounds still visible on the tablelands. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
here that's we go interesting. Again. Yeah. Yates also writes of the Starmake people of Navajo legend, describing them as a regal race of white giants endowed with mining technology who dominated the West, enslaved lesser tribes, and had strongholds all throughout the Americas. They were either extinguished or went back to the heavens. So one of the things about all these giants were they all had this like advanced technology. They all, you know, similar to those Nephilim that came down and taught all the people witchcraft, sorcery, mm-hmm. mathematics, and, you know, engineering, basically. It sounds a lot like the same thing.
Except for the Kandahar guy who just has a spear.
Yeah, I mean, he did have, I mean, it was like almost a 20-foot spear, though, so still pretty powerful.
He's good at carving.
Yeah. In 1553, Pedro Cieza de Leon wrote in the Chronicle of Peru about legendary giants described to him by the Manta indigenous people. There are, however, reports concerning giants in Peru who landed on the coast at the point of Santa Elena. The natives relate the following tradition, which had been received from their ancestors from very remote times. They arrived on the coast in boats made of reeds as big as large ships, a party of men of such size that from the knee downward, their height was as great as the entire height of an ordinary man. Though he might be of good stature, their limbs were all in proportion to the deformed size of their bodies, and it was a monstrous thing to see their heads, with hair reaching to their shoulders, red, and their eyes were as large as small plates. It says, Leon said that the sexual habits of the giants were revolting to the natives, and heaven eventually wiped out those giants because of those habits.
Man.
Pretty amazing. Mm. This is a story, this last one is so fascinating to me, and I'd heard of this before. I'd forgotten like what it was actually called, and so during this research, I'm so glad I ran across it because I want to do a full episode on this. But it talks about like the Paiute Indians. Mm-hmm. The Paiutes are said to have an oral tradition that told of red-haired white cannibals about 10 feet tall who lived in or near what is now known as Lovelock Cave in Nevada. It is unclear whether this oral tradition about the so-called Sitka giants existed, or if it was an exaggeration or distortion of their legends made after the Paiutes were mostly killed or dispersed in 1833 by an expedition by explorer Joseph Walker. I think that's pretty cool because once you start looking into the Paiutes and the mystery of Lovelock Cave, again, I want to do a full episode on this, but again, it talks about these giants. Now, these weren't, you know, 14, 15 footers, but it does talk about them having this existence which disappeared. So in 1886, a mining engineer named John T. Reed happened to hear a legend from a group of Paiutes while prospecting near Lovelock, Nevada. The Indians told him the legend was real and that the cave was located nearby. When he saw the cave himself, he knew he was onto something. And it goes on to kind of say that he, you know, they would find tons of like bat guano, which I guess could be somehow used for gunpowder or something. Mm-hmm. And so they excavated like 250 tons of this, but that led to an official excavation that was performed in 1912 by the University of California and, you know, what would eventually become, you guessed it, the Smithsonian, which that one was took place in 1924, and it told reports about thousands of artifacts being recovered that were extremely unusual. It talks about skeletons that were the smallest being 8 feet to 12 feet in height. A lot of them were like mummified, and that's what, you know, they're referred to as the Lovelock Giants. There was a sandal found that was 15 inches long. And then, this is really cool, there's what looks to be a handprint on a rock that, you guessed it, has 6 fingers.
Man.
So, like, there's all these, like, these, I just feel like there's so much of our history that's just been, like, either destroyed or hidden or, I mean, it's crazy, too, is that now that I'm so into, like, the, and I know I've referenced this 100 times on here, but, like, the Tartaria stuff and, like, the World's Fair stuff and, like,
it really does line up with all of this sort of prehistory kind of being, you know, hidden or locked mm-hmm. away. And it is kind of interesting if you're looking at this from the perspective of like all of this, you know, we think of it as like, oh, it was like the, you know, 16, 17, 1800s where all these remains of like giants and bones were all hidden by the Smithsonian and these other sort of organizations, if you will. But I've never really understood, like, well, what is the point of hiding these things?
You know? That's what I was about to say. Like, I've all of those things, the Tartaria, mm-hmm. the World's Fair stuff, the Smithsonian swooping in, or even just to hide them in at all. Is it like, is it because everything's just so terrifying that we can't know that there's giants?
No, I don't.
Or like, what's the point?
I'm wondering if you're looking at these sort of, you know, and I'm looking at like 17, 1800s as like, you know, the modern age. But I feel like if all of these, because, you know, like what I read before, like all of these tribes talk about, oh, there's all these races of giants. Mm-hmm. You know, they had these huge, fully, you know, advanced civilizations from as far as the east is to the west. And so, again, I know we haven't discussed Tartaria at all, but sort of the thought is like that there was this other civilization before that was kind of buried or destroyed or burned down or whatever. What if they're literally talking about, like, because one of the things with Tartaria too is like a lot of these, the architecture, you know, which is looked at as what we consider like quote unquote like Roman architecture. You know, it's very elaborate, beautiful, you know, sort of Art Nouveau kind of look, a lot of craftsmanship, a lot of detail, and sort of artistry. But a lot of these things have these, you know, doors that are 18 feet tall. And like, there's a lot of weird stuff if you're looking at it through the lens of like, well, maybe the giants were still around even at mm-hmm. the beginning of that sort of modern age of the 16, mm-hmm. 17, 1800s, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. It's interesting, man. I mean, one of the things that makes it pretty realistic, I mean, if there were giants like that that existed on Earth, of course, at some point, someone's going to be like, yep, he's in the army. Come on, pal. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that, yeah. The whole David and Goliath thing. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like, of course, he's going to be like the guy. They're like, ah, who cares?
Yeah.
Get Goliath out here. You know,
yeah.
One thing that I learned in this too that I hadn't had a chance to mention was that, like, I had no idea that Goliath also had a brother.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother, and I think a couple other folks that were like of that sort of race of large people got killed by David and his men.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know it.
Well, and it also talks about how, I think this is right, but if not, I'm sorry. I think it was a king named Og. Maybe, and again, I could be getting this wrong, but it was said that, and this was like, I think even like discovered, it said that his bed frame was something that, you know, many scholars believe, like when sort of translated into modern terms, would have been like 18 feet long and something like 10 feet wide or something crazy. And so it's like, what was the point of that? Like, why would...
Well, he might have had a wife that didn't want to snuggle. And let me tell you something.
18
It didn't
feet?
Matter. If my bed was 1,000 feet wide, mm-hmm. I would still have the... It doesn't matter if I've had a twin bed, a double bed, a queen bed, or a king. I still have the same amount of room that I'm allowed to be on in the bed. You understand what I'm saying to you? I get like the edge.
Oh, yeah. I kind of get that too. Yeah.
And so this poor king was probably like, well, maybe if I get like an 18-footer, I can just finally have enough room. Nope, sorry, pal. Now, for those of you interested, real quick, if you're like, well, I mean, do they, like, there's something like that that says, I've got two scriptures here for you to look up if you're thumbing through after Sunday school when you hear this episode on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Second book of Samuel 21, verse 18 through 22, and it talks about, basically it says, Elhanan, son of Jair, I guess, kills Goliath's brother, who had a spear with a shaft like a weaver's rod.
Mm-hmm.
In another battle, which took place in, I think, Gath,
mm-hmm.
there was a huge man with six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. 24 in all. Yep. That was the descended from Rapha, who you mentioned earlier.
Yep, the fallen ones, yeah. Or the dead, so the dead ones.
That's pretty cool if you want to put your eyes on that, listener,
yeah,
and see it for yourself. Because I'm one of those people, too, when they say, well, this is mentioned in the Bible, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And so I have to, like, put my eyes on it. I can't look it up online. Yeah, it could be doctored. I gotta get the book in my hand,
mm-hmm,
and see it for myself. And I saw it, so there you go.
Yeah, there's also, coming back to the Americas here, there's also a place, I think it's Massachusetts. It's one of, like, the oldest monuments to American soldiers. It's called the Nine Men's Misery Monument.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's apparently these people, these nine men were, you know, basically ambushed by, you know, whatever the local tribe was, and they were all, you know, killed, and it was really bad. I think it was the Wampanoag tribe. Mm. Oh, here it is. Yeah, it's in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New England area. Here we go. A group of nine soldiers escaped the original Indian ambush, but were separately later captured, tortured, and killed. They were found a day later by a military burial mission and buried on the spot where they were found. Because of the gruesome nature of the torture indicated by the state of the bodies, the site became known locally as Nine Men's Misery. According to some research, the bodies were immediately buried because it was so gruesome, like on the spot, you know, where the,
yikes,
mound was. They were,
yeah,
dug back up and removed in 1928, in which they sat in the Rhode Island Historical Society of Providence. They just, like, sat in crates
cool,
until 1976, which that's a long time. And so then they were, like, reinterred back into, you know, the ground in Cumberland. I don't know what that means. But I guess the myth is that one of those guys that was buried in there was named Benjamin Bucklin, and he was known to not only be a giant, but to also have six fingers on each hand, six toes, and also having two rows of teeth.
Weird.
And this is all coming up to 1676, that this sort of myth has, you know, it's like one of those things that, and we say this a lot, like, on the show, but I feel like there's these, like, little bits of high strangeness in stories that, like, how would any of these people had any sort of knowledge or forethought to, like, if this was just a made-up hoax or, like, a story, how, mm-hmm, would these people come up with that? Like, who's just going to come up and say, oh, well, he had two rows of teeth and, you know, six fingers and toe? It's like, it's just, yeah, so bizarre, and it just doesn't, it's so abstract to me, you know?
It's wild.
But it is weird, because so that's 1676, we're almost into the 1700s, but then anything that you look at in the history books, you know, we never see any of this stuff. All we know is that the tallest man ever recorded was Robert Wadlow, who was 8'11", which, again, that's massive. But he would die at the age of 22 in 1940. So, like, it's like there's so much of this other stuff that we were just never given the opportunity to know, that's only kind of lived on through, you know, outside of, like, the official historic record. You know what I mean?
Man.
One thing that I did find out, and this is what I'm kind of wanting to end on. I don't know how much truth is in this, but I ran across this three separate times when doing this research into a lot of the tribes and stuff. But one of the reasons it's believed, and again, this could be totally false, but one of the reasons a lot of people believe that, you know, when the natives would come up and they would hold up their hand to as a greeting,
yeah,
they were literally showing that they only had five fingers.
And then they said, my name is Inigo Montoya.
Oh, man. I thought you were
killed
gonna
my
say,
father. Prepare to die.
I thought you were gonna say Krakatoa.
No, no.
But yeah, I think that's really cool. And that's,
yeah,
who knows how much truth is in that. But I do think that's pretty interesting.
I think, dude, I think there's a book in there.
I think there's definitely a book. I mean, definitely the idea that, like, all these tribes all talked about these race of giants that they were warring with six fingers, six toes, red hair, you know, and then that idea that, like, you know, when we think in the modern era of, like, okay, if I was going to, you know, pretend to be like what mannerisms would I do if I were like playing charades and I was asked to be an Indian? I would hold up my hand, you know, it's like, and so the idea that that actually comes from something like that is just, I don't know. It's fascinating. It's cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, dude, you got anything else you want to say?
No, man. I've always wanted to know more about that, and I feel like we probably only scratched the surface into like the biblical side of things too. So it's super, super interesting. I love being able to explore those texts, and then also just in case people were wondering, I also kind of saw that it's not just the Bible that mentions these giants, but also the Quran does as well.
Oh yeah.
Yep. So, you know, anytime there's that sort of cross-reference amongst two religions that, you know, I don't think I'm going out of bounds here and saying that they don't really like necessarily see eye to eye on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So, you know, in Judeo-Christian culture, but also Muslim, they talk about these giants and even as potential descendants of the fallen. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool. I mean, it just made like I've been writing notes this whole time of things that I want to like read when I finally get through One Piece.
That'll be like 10 years from now. But
and I got a couple Star Wars books that Clay sent me. Yeah. I've got there's a Ray Bradbury Martian Chronicles that I want to read.
Wow,
you know,
cool.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You know, I mean, I partially knew that I wanted to like kind of get into the Nephilim stuff because I feel like.
You have to, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and I also feel like the Kandahar Giant is, you know, it fits just right in that, like, you know, like in the location that it was in, you know, it ties into, you know, the biblical stuff. And so I knew that I wanted to get into it, but I still think that, like, we'll probably end up having a proper Nephilim show because it gets real, like, I mean, everything that I said basically is just, a lot of it was just a lot of the
basics, yeah.
Sort of random knowledge that I just know about it. And so, like I said, guys like L.A. Marzulli, guys like Gary Wayne, I mean, it gets like super, super dense. And there is like some really cool connections between, and I'm sure I've glossed over and I've missed so many, but there are a lot of like connections of the Nephilim and those giants, you know, men of renown that, you know, they do create like really pretty solid through lines that, you know, lead to believe, oh, well, maybe that does explain Bigfoot, maybe, you know, and stuff like that. So I would actually love to try to get Gary Wayne on because he's one of those guys too, like a Stanton Friedman or a, you know, I mean, you've heard those guys where you literally just say, hi, Gary, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? And then the whole episode is just him talking, just giving you tons and tons of knowledge. But I would love to have him on to have like an official Nephilim episode because I think it could be really cool.
Yeah, man.
Well, if you would like to contact us, hit us up at Instagram, where the majority of our, you know, presence is on the internet. You know, drop a line in the comments and, you know, shoot us a DM if you have your own story or urban legend that, you know, maybe you think we may not know about or more sort of localized, like small town kind of stuff. That's the stuff that we love that. If it's kind of more long form and you'd like to do more of like an essay, if you will, shoot it over to thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com. We have a Patreon for those folks that just are not getting enough That Would Be Rad content here on the free feed, where it's just more of what you love. It's a little looser, a little more relaxed, a little later at night that we record, and we'd love to have you. There's different tiers for whatever financial situation you're in, and yeah, come join us. It's super fun over there. And we're so grateful and so appreciative to the folks that already are our patrons because it's a very real-time way to show your support. Mm-hmm. By, you know, times are tough, and so, you know, giving your hard-earned money to us means the world to us. It's definitely not lost on us. Buy us a coffee, go get a t-shirt, all that stuff's in our link tree, and go tell a friend about the show. And if you have time, go give us a 5-star review. It helps ping that algorithm and just get us in front of more and more new listeners, new ears. And I guess that's about it. What do you got, anything else?
Not this time, man.
Right on, dude. Well,
We love you. We appreciate you. And as always,
be rad.
That's the way it goes.
I mean, what kind of hammock are you looking for?
I mean, so we cleared out like our back.
Now, do you want one? Hold on. Let me be more specific with my question because already you're getting too long with the story. Do you want one that's like it stands on its own, like a frame?
No.
There's a hammock rope. Or one that you can take with you whenever you go camping and stuff.
Yes. So if you wouldn't have interrupted me, I would have said that we cleared out our backyard line, all the underbrush, and just kind of looking for like a chair or a hammock that just hangs.
Well, I mean, do you have trees to hang in?
Like, yeah, we got a bunch of trees.
Put it in between?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's awesome.
Dude, I mean, to be honest with you, now that the main brand that everybody used to get, I can't even remember what it's called. It's like, I think it's called Evo or something like EVO. Hmm. You can get them at REI or Academy or whatever. You know, they've been out so long now, dude, that you can just get a dadgum copycat off of Amazon for like $15.
Yeah,
that's what I would get.
That's what I've been looking at.
That's what one of those companies sent me whenever I was, you know, more active on YouTube. And it was great.
When you were a professional YouTuber?
Yeah, whenever I was like my kind of family camping video, like just exploded. And I got a lot of money from it and free stuff, which is awesome.
That is cool.
Okay.
Wait, didn't you get a... Is that the thing that connects
like a tent
to your Jeep? Yeah, the tent.
I have like a, like a tent that connects to my Jeep. I've got hammocks, different camping stoves, tons of
rope.
Oh, like a whole tent?
Mm-hmm.
You guys need a tent? It's a whole family size. I got all kinds of stuff,
that's
man.
Cool, man. I mean, I just need a hammock.
You can get it on Amazon. Never heard of it. That's actually. Come
just
on,
lets
man.
People
get your head.
Hey,
just get your head out of here.
Heard of a like bookends?
Yeah, I don't like so that sort of as a bookend. Just get your head out of here.
It's a callback to the first one.
Okay.
Okay.